year is 1995. The FBI is scrambling to find some piece of evidence to ease the minds of many Americans. They will receive a 35,000-word essay from someone claiming to be the Unabomber. In it, he explains his motives and views of the ills of modern society. After much debate about the idea of giving in to terrorists, FBI Director Luis Fray and Attorney General Janet Reno approve the task force's recommendation to publish the essay in hopes that a reader somewhere out there could identify who the author was. Welcome back to Forensic Files. I'm Gavin Ochoa, and today we're looking into the Unabomber case. We will also specifically look at how his manifesto led to his eventual capture. In 1979, an FBI-led task force that included the ATF and U.S. Postal Inspection Service was formed to investigate the Unabomb case. Unabomb stood for the University and Airline Bombing Targets Involved. The task force would go to more than 150 full-time investigators, analysts, and others involved in the case. In search of clues, the team made every possible forensic examination of recovered bomb components and studied the lives of victims in minute detail. These efforts would unfortunately not provide any leads as to the identity of the bomber, who took pains to leave no forensic evidence, building his bombs essentially from scrap materials available almost everywhere and anywhere. And the victims, investigators later learned, were randomly chosen from library research. The case would have little progress until the Unabomber himself started sending in letters and a manifesto. The FBI saw this as their best option to follow, and they began to analyze every sentence, phrase, and word the bomber gave them. The FBI would also decide to reach out to the newspapers and publish the manifesto in hope that a reader could help identify the author. After the manifesto appeared in the Washington Post and New York Times, thousands of people suggested possible suspects. One was sent out to the FBI, however. David Kaczynski described his troubled brother Ted, who had grown up in Chicago, taught at the University of California at Berkeley, which is where two of the bombs had been placed, and then lived in time for Salt Lake City before settling permanently into a primitive cabin that the brothers had constructed near Lincoln, Montana. Most importantly, David provided letters and documents written by his brother to the FBI. Their linguistic analysis determined that the author of those papers and the manifesto were almost certainly the same person. When combined with facts from the bombings and Kaczynski's lifestyle, the analysts provided the basis for a search warrant. On April 3, 1996, investigators went to the desolate cabin in the woods. When they arrived, they knew immediately they had their man. They on-site arrested Kaczynski and combed his cabin to go over all the evidence just lying in plain sight. There, they found a wealth of bomb components and over 40,000 handwritten journal pages that included bomb-making experiments and descriptions of Unabomber crimes, and one live bomb ready for mailing. With all the overwhelming evidence, Ted Kaczynski would take a guilty plea deal. He was sentenced to life in prison with no chance of parole. He would be taken to a supermax prison in Colorado, living out the rest of his days in an isolated cell. The odd thing to consider about this case is how Kaczynski basically put the nail in his own coffin. By sending in the manifesto, he gave them something to use. Without it, who knows how the case could have gone. He may have still been caught, but how long would it have taken? How much more time would he have had? How many more bombs could he have put out there in the world? His own handwriting, something unique and personal to him, led to his own downfall in the end.